This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore. Why don't you talk to me?
Good evening, my name is Sue and you're listening to Hear Me Roar. It's like I've never left, really.
I know, you sound just like that other woman that was on before the news.
Gee, she was hot, wasn't she?
Oh, she was great. Damn good. I wish I could work with her one day.
Oh, you know what, we can only aspire to that.
Absolutely.
Because she's just, not only has she got a great radio voice, but she's sexy.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Thank you very much. Now, co-hosting with that lovely, lovely voice is the lovely Leanne.
Good evening.
Good evening. Leanne, before we go any further, would you like to explain what just happened to you in the foyer? In the, what would you call that area?
The green room. What happened to me? I'm feeling a bit green about it. What happened was I had some chicken and rice, and you know when you have something savoury, you think, I need something sweet.
I do, because I have mints.
Well, I hunted around, and all I could find was some bubble gum.
In the studio?
In the studio, there was a bowl of bubble gum. The brand was Big Boy.
Hang on. So the brand was Big Boy.
Big Boy bubble gum. And I was rushing in here, and yes. I swallowed the Big Boy. In one gulp, and it stuck in my craw.
I can't help myself, but the lesbian swallowed a Big Boy.
That was probably the first and last time. So,
but you're a champion. You're still here on the radio.
I am, and I'm just worried that if I burp, the yellow bubble's going to come out. But
as long as you don't fart like that 120-kilogram cow. Did you hear it? Sow, not cow.
Don't look at me when you say that.
Ballarat. And 15 firefighters turned up for this gas smell. And they couldn't work out what it was. Anyway, they got close and realised it was this 120-kilogram pig with a flatulence.
Creating methane.
Isn't that gorgeous?
That could have powered half of Ballarat during winter.
I reckon it might have. December the 1st is World AIDS Day.
Next Tuesday.
Yeah, so it's AIDS Week.
That's right. Yeah. More than one event.
Yeah. So we're actually going to work our way through that one tonight, because tonight we're talking HIV with two amazing women. We're catching up with Michelle Wesley. She's the Peer Support Coordinator for Positive Women Victoria. And we're also talking to Dr. Susan Paxton. Now, she's a member of Positive Women Victoria and has been living with HIV for 2 decades now. Now, she's an advocate for the rights of all people living with HIV.
That's right.
You look at me weirdly, aren't you?
No, not at all. I mean, it's a serious thing, and it's not that often in our community that we actually talk to women about HIV. So,
yeah, so
and I guess in many ways they're forgotten group.
Look, so. They're a minority with a minority, and it's pretty tough going for these women. There's a lot of discrimination, so we're going to look at what kind of discrimination they're facing, and I guess not so much about their own personal stories, but I guess they're reflective of their personal stories. But looking, I guess I want to find out more about what's happening in the world and their communities and things that are going on for these women. Good evening. My name is Sue and you're listening to Hear Me Roar. Tonight we're talking to Susan Paxton. She's the advisor to the Asia Pacific Network of People Living with HIV, and to Michelle Wesley, a peer support coordinator for Positive Women Victoria. We're taking on the subject of HIV tonight. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Who would like to start?
I'm an advisor to the Asia Pacific Network of People Living with HIV, which means that I was a board member, an Australian rep on the network. I work privately as a consultant, but I do a lot of volunteer work for the network, and I've done lots of things like training people living with HIV in the Asia and the Pacific region. But I'm a single parent. My child is about to become 21 and finish university, which is wonderful because I wasn't supposed to live till he finished primary school, so it's quite an achievement.
That's amazing. Yeah. Michelle?
I'm the Peer Support Coordinator with Positive Women Victoria. I've been in that role now for about a year. I've actually been living with HIV for 21 years, so a lot of the earlier years I was sort of out of action with illness, unfortunately. But since then, I did a lot of volunteer work in the HIV community, I guess. Did a bit of training along the way, and a year ago was employed by Positive Women as the peer support coordinator.
That must be an amazing role.
It's fantastic. It's really rewarding and very needed.
I think it's a different story for all of us with HIV, and I'd probably be one of the lucky ones in terms of 10 years ago my health was in a shocking state. I'd been, had HIV then for about just over 10 years, and I started taking antiretrovirals, and I've never looked back, and I've been very, very lucky that my health has been quite in abundant supply since over the last decade.
That must be an amazing change for you.
It was. I started popping the pills and went, hello, is this placebo effect after 2 weeks? But it wasn't. Yes, and I've turned from somebody that used to stir my Chinese herbs and go away, you toxic drugs, to embracing them, loving them, and even writing a song about them.
Oh, we might get
No, we won't.
I could get my guitar.
Welcome to the Folk Hour on Joy 94.9.
That would be lovely. We could have a new segment. Michelle, tell us about your role at Positive Women Victoria.
Well, Positive Women, we're the only support group for women in Victoria. We cover the whole of Victoria. So we have a really diverse membership. HIV, I guess, among women is generally very silent. Women aren't prepared for an HIV diagnosis at all. And at Positive Women, what we do, we provide information, we advocate on behalf of our members, and our main role is providing peer support. As I said, as the peer support coordinator, I do a lot of that. We do a lot of one-on-one support with members. A lot of that is phone support. Again, geographically, we've got a very diverse membership as well. We're spread all over Victoria. We do have office drop-ins. We're actually located at the Alfred Hospital at Fairfield House at the back of the hospital. So it's quite convenient if women do have appointments at the hospital, they can drop in for a coffee and a chat. We provide a monthly newsletter, which is full of information, HIV information, the latest information, and also information on what we're doing as a group to keep our members connected. On top of that, we run a number of support events throughout the year, which are dinners, family days, picnics, and a lot of those events do include families because a lot of our members do have children.
I have noticed some of those events. There's a recent one where there's is it all a women's basketball team or some sort of a team? It was a fitness event. What was that?
We did have a Positive Women's Triathlon team.
That was it. Oh, how
a very
super.
Successful yeah. group of girls. Yeah. Yes.
They were buff. I know I was having a perv. I saw the newsletter. They were great. It looks fantastic. What an amazing event to show that these women who have HIV are out there. And not only out there, I couldn't run a triathlon. I'd be down there
exactly.
panting.
Exactly, yes.
That's fantastic.
And their slogan was, Positive Women Kick Butt.
That's great.
And it can be really scary joining a peer support group, but I know for me, it was a lifeline. I mean, I was diagnosed nearly 18, 19 years ago, and my first question was, are there any other women like me? Because you feel like you're a bit of the modern-day sort of social leper. Nobody would want to come and touch you if you had HIV. And taking that first step to join a peer support can be frightening for some people, but it's really useful because it normalises the HIV. It makes you realise that today it's a chronic manageable condition. It means there are other women. You can talk about medications or what HIV has done to you or your self-esteem or the whole range of issues that HIV does bring up for women.
And particularly if you don't feel, I guess, comfortable with other friends and family.
Well, I was just going to say that they're things that women can't generally talk about with their, you know, their neighbours, their friends. HIV is not something that these people generally know about.
Yeah, or have the experience of.
Yes.
Mm. So and even if they're supportive, they don't know about that experience.
One of the things, I guess, adding to that fear with joining the support group, even today, most women diagnosed with HIV have never, ever met anybody else living with HIV. So, you know, it's a really isolating diagnosis and a very scary feeling. You feel like you're the only one.
It would be. Yeah, it would be horrendous those early days to feel so isolated. And I can imagine there's a lot of information or I guess some progress for rural areas at the moment trying to access people for general issues, especially within the GLBTIQ. But even more so with people living with HIV in rural areas getting access to
absolutely.
That information.
I mean, if you get cancer or you have a heart disease or something, you can go home, oh, I've got, you know, this mm-hmm. and that and the other. But one doesn't generally tend to sort of go home, oh, I've got HIV, or, you know, publicise yeah, it yeah. To one's work colleagues. It still has that social taboo.
It does, and I guess we've still got a long way to go.
Yeah.
You've written an astounding and amazing amount of literature.
Yes,
could you tell us about your role?
Well, it kind of started. I've had a few incarnations. The one before the before HIV was I was working in drama in theatre, and when I got involved as a volunteer with people living with HIV, lots and lots of people said, "Oh, I'm always asked to speak out in public, but I don't know how to." And I thought that with my previous work, I could write something, sort of a manual that could help people in the Asia Pacific region. Well, it was the Asia in Asia in those days. This is over a decade ago. And I wrote a manual on how to do public speaking. So that was the first sort of product, and that's been translated into many languages. And then a few years later, we'd decided in the Asia Pacific Network to look at discrimination of people living with HIV because it had never been measured before. And we took a quite sort of unique approach, and we trained people living with HIV to go out and collect the data, which in itself was a very empowering thing for people with HIV to become the researchers. And we did the first documentation of AIDS-related discrimination. Since then, I've done various other projects for the network. And the most recent one this year was I wrote a book of the life stories of 10 women and one girl living with HIV, and also a documentary of four of those women's lives.
Oh, I really want to read that. How can we get onto that reading material?
I'll give you a copy of it.
I love you.
Unifemme. Got the copyright.
You're listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9.
So, Michelle, just for some of our listeners who perhaps aren't sure, could you perhaps explain the difference between HIV and AIDS?
Yeah, sure. Basically, HIV is a virus. That's the virus that can enter your bloodstream and attack your immune system. AIDS usually happens sometime after that virus has been attacking your system. AIDS stands for Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome. So what it means is it's a syndrome of illnesses. So usually once your immune system is quite compromised, mm-hmm. you're susceptible to various other infections, illnesses, cancers, viruses, and certain of those illnesses mark you as moving into having AIDS.
So it's when your body just doesn't have the system or the ability to
immunity.
Fight to fight that.
That's right, yes.
So that would be different for different people, I imagine, different people at different stages and the sort of manifestation of that.
Very different. You can have quite a healthy immune system and still be quite ill. Mm. You can have quite a depleted immune system and really be quite healthy. There's little rhyme or reason
and
to it.
And probably we're the examples of each side of that, because I have had almost no immune system and I didn't actually get sick. And
whereas, yeah, my immune system hasn't necessarily gotten that low, but I have struggled quite a bit with illness over the years.
But with the terminology, we used to say people with HIV/AIDS. Now that we have antiretroviral drugs that can, you know, treat this chronic condition, we like to call it now, we're trying to separate it, because in Australia, in theory, nobody should get AIDS. I mean, we should all be, that those who have HIV, we ought to be able to live long and healthy lives with the medication. Unfortunately, some people are still diagnosed really late when they are already sick. But if we could get messages out there to say, come in, get tested so we can monitor your health, in theory, we shouldn't have people being diagnosed at the point where they have no immune system left.
So hence using the term chronic disease that can be managed as opposed to other
I'd even say chronic condition. So it's you know, trying to get away from this, any stigmatizing labels, because it has so much stigma anyway.
Yeah, I think that late diagnosis is particularly problematic where women are concerned. If you're not aware of HIV and it's the last thing on your mind that you may have possibly been infected, you're not going to get tested and you're not going to know about it until you get sick, generally.
Symptoms.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's sad, the late diagnosis and so forth, knowing that things can be done earlier.
And I think also stigma will add to that as well. Very hard to go and get a test in the face of that sort of stigma.
Mm. When I spoke to Annie Phelan recently, she was talking about Papua New Guinea and being tested in the hallways. There's women and men being tested in the hallways. I mean, I can't even imagine the stigma attached to that. At least here, I guess, we have sexual health clinic and we have, I guess, more privacy-related testing. But it's still, if you don't know or you don't think that it's a possibility, then why would you?
Exactly.
It's not on the normal agenda. I'll pop down and get a HIV test.
And I've even done research quite recently in four Asian countries, six Asian countries, I should say, from India to China. And within that sample, it was nearly 70% of the women that we interviewed had their HIV test because either they or their husband had been ill. So it meant that they'd had HIV for some time in that family or in that relationship, and it was only some of these countries have got quite high levels of HIV, like in Cambodia, but still people are not testing.
It's not common practice.
No. How can women get HIV? Who would like to take that one on, Michelle?
Well, HIV is a bloodborne virus, so basically through unprotected intercourse. Or sharing needles.
One thing that we don't talk about. Well, there's two things we don't talk about. The fact that oral sex has a negligible risk because there's almost no HIV in saliva, and saliva kills the virus. So the only way we can get HIV through oral sex is if the person who is using their mouth has cuts and lesions in the mouth, and the person they are using their mouth and tongue on have cuts and lesions in exactly the place where their mouth and tongue is.
So it's so
between
unlikely.
Between women, sex between women is there's a negligible risk. There's only been one recorded risk, one recorded case in the States, and that is a case of heavy fisting where there was direct blood contact. Mm-hmm. So lesbians who are, you know, only having sex with women are pretty safe. But one area that we never talk about is anal sex between men and women. And we know that lots of gay women do have sex with men. Mm-hmm. A lot of gay women are actually bisexual. And we never talk about the risks of receptive anal sex of women. And some women are being the receptors of anal sex to avoid pregnancy. I've even heard stories that some women are having anal sex to avoid HIV, which is really scary because, unfortunately, the anus is much more delicate than the vagina and can rip and have micro lesions much more easily. And that's why it's much easier for gay men engaged in anal sex to contract HIV. Much easier than for women who are engaged in vaginal sex.
But perhaps some of these women who aren't educated around sexual practice see penis-vagina sex as intercourse, and that's the way that it's contracted.
Exactly. And we don't like to talk about it because getting down to the, we don't do that in our society.
Well, it seems these levels of stigma and taboo that already the sort of around the sex thing and then particular things that, you know.
I think it is important to mention, though, that HIV is a very, very fragile virus and really quite hard to catch. Very, very easy to avoid catching, and condoms, you know, manage that.
When you're talking about a woman having anal sex with a man, are you talking about a man with HIV passing on the condition? I mean,
yes.
It doesn't just happen because you have a man and a woman having anal sex who neither have HIV. Because that is a misconception too.
Yeah,
because you're having anal sex. Anal sex is associated with, I can't even think of the word now. What's the word? boys, homosexuals. I couldn't think of homosexuals. I'm in the wrong place, aren't
you
I?
Are.
Yeah, thanks very much.
You're listening to Joy Radio, can you believe it or not?
I've lost the plot. Oh, God, I'm going to... Anyway, so, yeah, that's a misconception that I have heard, which is strange, isn't it?
It is. Indeed. I know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just would have thought that it was obvious that one of the partners needed to have the virus to transmit it.
But yeah, you've got to have HIV in your body, and that liquid or fluid with HIV, which is either blood, semen, vaginal fluid, or breast milk, has to enter the bloodstream of the receptor.
Yeah, that's right.
In some way.
You've heard it here first. I didn't make it up.
Oh, no, obviously.
Just talking to the wrong people.
So I've been reading a bit on the Positive Women website, and it seems to me that the question of how a particular individual acquired HIV is often asked, and it seems to be, and I can understand why, an irrelevant and offensive question. Does that come through in the peer group, Michelle?
Absolutely, yes. When you're asked how you got HIV, it's generally with stigma in mind, and people are assuming a lot of things about you. We say it really doesn't matter how you got infected. You know, we're all in the same boat.
Yep.
And I think one of the reasons people want to know, they want to know, oh, are you one of those, dirty, useless, rotten, let's throw you away, sex workers or drug users, or, well, obviously we're not gay men unless we had good sex changes. Mm-hmm. Or are you one of those innocent, poor victims who was a wife of a fellow? You know, so we play this blame game.
Sort of devil and angel.
Yeah.
Sort of
thing. And the fact is, once you get HIV, it doesn't damn well matter, because once you've got the virus, within the health system, for example, you are treated the same way as anybody else. Mm. So it's completely irrelevant. You are faced with discrimination because you have this virus in your blood. And you're not actually faced with discrimination because of how you get it. You're faced with discrimination because people are afraid of it. Even health workers are afraid of the virus, afraid of touching you. And that's where the discrimination is, and women face actually more discrimination than men do.
What types of discrimination are we talking?
Heaps of discrimination. Women are much more likely to be physically beaten up by their partner or husband because they come home and say they've got HIV. I'm talking about Asia here. I haven't done these sorts of research in Australia.
Not only being diagnosed, but even if they've gone for a test or counselling, that can lead to violence.
Yeah.
With the assumption that they've done something wrong, else why would they be having a test?
Families rejecting the woman, and that does happen in Australia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Families not wanting them to come to the wedding or come to the christening or come to the engagement party and this sort of thing. So being excluded.
Or not wanting them to be around the nieces and nephews even, you know, to that extreme.
Pick up the babies.
Is that because they're frightened that you're going to pass on the virus?
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
And then, you know, not being allowed into public places. I know stories like a Balinese woman who's not allowed into the family temple because she has HIV. I know a Filipino woman was told she wasn't allowed to go into her church any longer. And so a whole range of, you know, I know women who've been kicked out of their home because they've had HIV, and they were sort of living a middle class existence and ended up sleeping in gutters with her four children. So there's a whole range of discrimination that can happen after diagnosis.
So that the consequences of contracting HIV aren't just at a health level, it affects obviously every aspect of someone's life.
If you didn't have discrimination, if there was no stigma and discrimination surrounding HIV, by now we should have been able to sort of, in inverted commas, normalise it really encourage people to come and test much more. But until that happens, until we don't have any discrimination, we still have to be extremely careful about encouraging people to get diagnosed and then disclosing to partners and disclosing to family and friends.
Thank you for listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. Tonight we're talking HIV with Susan Paxton, who's the advisor to the Asia Pacific Network of People Living with HIV, and to Michelle Wesley, who is the Peer Support Coordinator for Positive Women Victoria. Is there a cure Is there a vaccine? Where are we at medically?
Magic tablet.
No cure yet, unfortunately.
No, there's a recent news of a vaccine that's been proven to be 30-odd% effective in preventing people contracting HIV. So there's a ray of hope for people who don't have HIV. I don't think anyone will spend much effort trying to cure us because I hate to be a cynic, but the drug companies are making a lot of money from the drugs now that are being supplied to, you know, millions of people around the world.
Is this the PEP?
No, PEP is post-exposure prophylaxis. That's if you have a risky sexual situation. Say, for example, a woman's raped in Papua New Guinea. It's highly likely she could be. It's quite likely she could be raped by somebody living with HIV. So she could go to a clinic, and in theory, if they've got stocks in there, she can start taking the antiretroviral drugs that Michelle and I are on, and if she takes those for, I think it's 3 months, she has a high likelihood that she will not contract the virus.
So is that back to what Michelle said about the virus being very fragile, that if you can sort of attack it early, you can maybe knock it out.
And here in Australia, PEP is more likely to be used, maybe if you have an incidence of a condom breaking, you can sort of rush off the next morning or that night and get access to PEP.
Yeah, or a nurse who has a needle stick injury. Mm-hmm. She is taking blood from a person who's got HIV, and then the needle sticks into her, so she has to, she might have to take PEP. Yeah. Yeah.
And PEP consists of taking, as Susan said, the antiretrovirals that people living with HIV, if they're on medications, take every day. It's really interesting. When I was diagnosed 21 years ago, there was one medication available to treat HIV. Now there are more than 20. So a big part of my role at Positive Women is talking about treatments with our members, getting access to the latest information, because it is always changing.
Mm-hmm. Are you supported through the Medicare fund? Does that assist with people living with HIV?
Yes.
And that covers everything or most, or how does it work? Because I'm sure it must be expensive.
Well, I'm actually on a disability pension. So for me, all my HIV antiretrovirals are provided on the PBS system, which is the pharmaceutical benefits scheme.
But I'm a self-employed consultant, but I still get my antiretrovirals free. And that is a really important thing. I think the only developed country that does not give it free is Singapore. And it's a very important principle, because if you start to give it free to the poor, but the rich have to pay for it, then what was discovered in countries like Cambodia and Papua New Guinea was the rich people would buy it at a cheaper rate from the poor, and the poor would die. And it's important for a number of reasons. You want people to, once you start these drugs, you want people to stay on them for the rest of their life, because if they don't, they develop drug-resistant forms of HIV, and we don't want to spread drug-resistant forms of HIV around.
No, you don't want to mutate and then have a whole other battle.
Yeah, so it's a public health reason why you should give free drugs.
And it's back to that philosophy of everyone's the same, isn't it? I mean, as you said, they're all, if there's the opportunity to create difference somehow, we're human beings.
I know, but you know, looking at it in pure economics or political terms, I mean, I don't think governments care if one individual dies, but if that one individual creates a public health risk, like, you know, mutant HIV, then it is, you know, serious.
That's right. And what about, we've talked about developed countries, what about less developed countries in terms of availability of treatment?
It was a hopeless situation at the beginning of the millennium. Then in early 2001, Thailand started producing antiretroviral drugs at $1 a day. So there are a lot of generic companies now in India, Thailand, China that are providing drugs. And yes, there are millions of people now on antiretroviral drugs, certainly not all the people that need it. It's very hard. You have to have particular prescribers. In some countries, women have to travel, or people, not just women, have to travel long distances every month to get their drugs. So the accessibility and having this lifelong commitment of having to go every month to the local health clinic where those drugs are available, which might be a long, long way away, and pay your transport, is still a challenge.
and where everyone will know that you've got HIV. Everyone will know that you've got HIV if they see you going there. Yeah.
So then you get the stigma, and then you get kicked out of home, and then you get on the poverty line, and then you can't get to the transport to get to the tablet.
Yes.
Terrible cycle, isn't it?
Spiral.
And it is a bit of a spiral, because 2/3 of the world's poor are women, but HIV impoverishes women even further, because generally most women in the region that we're living in, they contract HIV from their partners, husbands, long-time their spouses, and then they spend all this money when the husband gets sick to try and find, oh, what's wrong with him, what's the cure, and spend all the life savings, sometimes selling land to try and get the cure for this person. Then the person's found to have HIV, it's usually too late, the husband dies, he's often the breadwinner, and the woman is therefore left in an impoverished position. She has no savings, and if she had a little business, like she makes cakes and sells them to the local kids or whatever, no one will buy her produce because they know she's the AIDS widow. So that's so you have this sort of levels of stigma that even impoverish women to a greater extent because of HIV.
And I mean, I know it's different in Australia, but I mean, I was thinking about it coming in this morning. Still, HIV women don't have a high profile in Australia, I don't think, as compared to the
men. That's exactly right.
I guess there's a number of reasons for that. I've got my opinions. Have you got some theories around that, Michelle? I don't want to get you in political hot water.
Let's do it.
I just think it's not a popular topic anymore. We had the sort of the mass fear campaigns in the early 80s of the Grim Reaper.
Mm-hmm.
Through the fear that they created, I think they did a wonderful job in preventing the infection rate of HIV. And unfortunately, I think we've forgotten that message, and the rate is increasing.
And I think also in Australia, it has. We were very lucky that we had Neil Blewett as the health minister in the mid-80s, because I'd probably disagree with Michelle. I would say it wouldn't be the fear campaigns, but his policies understanding that HIV is going to spread if we don't arrest it in drug users and gay men. So we had good education in those sectors, but what that actually did was spread this message that that's perhaps the only way you can contract HIV. So if you're not a drug user, you're not a gay man, you tend to think in this country that you're not going to be susceptible. And it has remained that most people who are diagnosed are still, the majority are still gay men, but I think there's an increasing number of women from, and particularly women with partners from developing countries, or women who've travelled, or women who've come, refugees who've come from developing countries. We have an increase in HIV.
We certainly have noticed that in our membership, that we've got an increasing number of members from various cold communities.
Right.
But also a lot of Australian women as well. And I guess that's a lot of the reason why we did our peer support program. Positive Women actually ran a therapeutic peer support program for our members. It's the only program that's actually been run in Victoria. This was the first time, so it was very much a pilot program for us. We advertised to our members and got a few members involved. And the members that were involved were incredibly committed. It was a wonderful experience. We met for 10 weeks weekly. We had a counsellor to facilitate the group, and myself as the peer support facilitator. We met, as I said, for 10 weeks, and we worked through, so much stuff. Unfortunately, 10 weeks just isn't long enough to get through what we need to get through. But even in those 10 weeks... there were some amazing examples of women overcoming barriers, and one woman, for example, was able to move out of an abusive relationship with the help of the other positive women. Yeah, it was a really amazing experience.
That's true peer support in that sense, isn't it? That's
absolutely.
Fantastic. So where to from here? What do we need to do? Big question.
Huge question.
Yeah, I think we certainly, within the gay community, I think there has to be a lot more awareness raised. We forget that there are young people discovering their sexuality every year. Every year we have to keep doing this. If there are any teachers out there, get in touch with Positive Women and get one of us to come and talk to you, your kids at school. It makes a huge difference. I mean, I did a study that showed that if you meet a person living with HIV, it changes attitudes. You know, it has a longitudinal effect on attitudes.
Absolutely, yes.
I know reading the stories on the website, number one, need to congratulate those women for making those stories available, but then just the impact of, I guess it's personalising it too, but it also gives the breadth of, you know, the people who are affected and just the different experiences.
The diversity of our experiences.
So I think that gets back to what you were saying, Susan.
Yes.
I'd like to thank you both for coming in. It's an amazing topic to go through, and I, at a personal level, have learnt so much, so thank you both.
Thank you.
But the one thing I've really learnt is that information and knowledge will make change. It will make change in policies, and it will reduce the discrimination that women with HIV face. So I'm hoping that we can be one step further. There are contact details for Positive Women Victoria. It's positivewomen.org.au. The phone number is 03-9076-6918. Have a look at the website. Make a phone call. No more. I think it's people without HIV that actually need to know a bit more, I guess, so we can stop this discrimination.
Yes, and treat us like normal people.
You've been listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.